The Los Angeles Dodgers signed both Roky Sasaki and Tanner Scott this weekend, because of course they did. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Monday, January 20th, your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on Twitter. Tell all your friends, firstpitchpodcast.com is where they can go to get every single new episode that we drop. And Troy, this one's going to be, I'm going to say, controversial. The Los Angeles Dodgers did what we expected them to do over the weekend, signing Japanese phenom Roky Sasaki as an international free agent. So it'll be when he gets promoted, it'll be 6 years of team control. First three at minimum salaries, years 4 through 6 through arbitration. I'm sure he'll have an extension before then. After narrowing it down to the Dodgers, the Padres, and the Blue Jays sometime last week. We're going to get to Tanner Scott in just a minute, and we'll probably end up mentioning AJ Minter while we're in there. But how surprised were you that Roky Sasaki ended up signing with the Los Angeles Dodgers?
Well, I've got to be honest. I proved to be a little bit more of a mark than I should have been, because I fell for the whole, oh, I want to go to a medium market team. I don't want to go to the biggest team. I don't want to go to the team with all
and
the
then in
players.
Person he met with the Yankees and the Mets and then the Dodgers.
Yeah, and I fell for all that nonsense, and I said it multiple times on Twitter. He did a fantastic job of making himself a villain before going and joining the evil empire of the Los Angeles Dodgers with that nonsense. Sense and the charade of I'm going to a medium market team. I don't care about the Dodgers. I just want to be developed. They don't develop players. They sign all their players. And so it's especially pitchers. They don't develop pitchers well because all of their pitchers get hurt. And so it's just he just made a complete mockery of everything and wasted everybody's time, plus eliminating one team every like at scheduled intervals. Like he was on The Bachelor giving people roses was just complete and utter nonsense. So it's just, it was a mockery of the whole system, and everybody expected him to go to the Dodgers. I don't know why I didn't, but it's he's we've talked about it before. He's more of a prospect than a proven thing in Major League Baseball anyway. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with him and how he performs in Major League Baseball.
I will say, on the developing pitchers thing, I think they get I think they're a little bit misunderstood because they signed Yamamoto and they traded for Glasnow and signed Snell and signed Ohtani. But like, they do have a decent track record of getting high octane arms to the majors. To your point, a lot of them got hurt, and the Dodgers did an internal review of like what's causing these guys get hurt. But I did make a list, I believe, in response to somebody else after this signing, like, Walker Buehler was an ace before that second Tommy John. He looked like he was one of the best pitchers in baseball. Gavin Stone, Tony Gonsolin, Dustin May, Landon Knack, Nick Frosso, River Ryan, Kyle Hurt, who is hurt, Ryan Pepiot, who was traded. Like, they can get arms. They can develop their arms as well. Just like you said, these guys get hurt a lot. I do think, one, if I'm any opposing team, I'm calling the Dodgers to try to trade for some of these young guys, right? Trade for a Tony Gonsolin or a Dustin May, maybe. But I do think it's worth pointing out, everybody says that the Dodgers are just like, they have the death rotation. We don't know if any of these guys are going to throw 140. You had a good tweet about this, or I think on Sunday. But like, Snell's only done it twice in his career. He did win a Cy Young both those years, but he's only done it twice. Ohtani's done it exactly one time. No one else has thrown 140 innings in their career. Glasnow hasn't. Sasaki didn't, even in Japan. Yamamoto had 100 last year. Gonsolin and May were injured and coming back from major injuries. Like, I feel like it's entirely possible if they make the World Series again, which they are the favorites in baseball to make the World Series, obviously. Not a guarantee, but they're the favorites. They still may have to do a bullpen game at some point in time in the World Series, simply because so many of these guys don't have a track record of staying healthy. But when they're healthy, obviously, it's the best rotation in baseball. But I feel like for them, more so than maybe anyone else, that health thing is a giant caveat.
Absolutely. Everybody likes to, they have the biggest names as far as their pitching rotation. They have the biggest names in baseball. And like I've said multiple times, to me, health is a big thing for me. You're only as good as many times as you can get on the field. And
ability, availability.
Yep, best ability is availability. And their starting rotation has shown, for the most part, throughout their careers, that they do not have that ability. And so while when they are on the field, they are really good. And another thing about Shohei Ohtani, he's coming off his second Tommy John surgery. Mm-hmm. So who's to say he's even going to pitch 50, 60 innings this year? And then who's to say that after this year he ever pitches again after what he did as just a designated hitter last year? It's just the Phillies still have the best rotation in baseball. That's not biased to me because all of them stay healthy. Statistically, they're the best rotation in baseball top to bottom. If the Dodgers rotation was able to stay healthy and all of them pitch 140 plus innings, then yeah, they'd be the best. But no, to me, they're not.
Yeah, that rotation is bringing back, if you look at, I mean, the list of Snell, Yamamoto, Glasnow, Ohtani, Sasaki, Gonsolin, and May. If you go with a seven-man rotation, they are bringing back 50 starts from last year, and they're bringing back 328 innings because Gonsolin, May, Ohtani, none of them threw a pitch in the majors. Sasaki obviously was not here yet. Glasnow had 134. He had the most, right?
And Snell, that was his career high.
Yeah. Snell had 104, and Yamamoto had 90. And so, yes, there absolutely is a, like, there you can see a path where this pitching staff again falters and they have to figure it out, right? They have to figure it out on the fly and kind of piece it together as they go. But if they do that, it will be with a much better bullpen than they had going into the weekend. They added Tanner Scott, the best, not only the best closer and the best lefty out there, 4 years, $72 million, signing bonus of $20 million, $21 deferred money. We got some reports, some with money, some without. The Cubs offered four for 66, so more money by the Dodgers on the top line figure. But if you, when you count the deferred, probably less money overall with the Dodgers when you count the present value of the deferred money. The Red Sox apparently had a higher AAV, but I think less years. I think it was 3 years and not four. And he chose to go to the Dodgers. Fun fact right now, if you go on SpotTrack and you look at the Dodgers, I'm not SpotTrack, if you go on Fangraphs, roster resource, and you look in the Dodgers rotation, I'm sorry, the Dodgers, gosh, the Dodgers bullpen, they're in there as having three closers right now. Tanner Scott, Michael Kopech, and Blake Treinen are all listed as closers in that pen. Kopech had 15 saves last year. Scott had 22. That's ignoring the fact that Evan Phillips had 18 saves last year for the Dodgers. I had him in fantasy for a little while because I was getting some easy saves and good ratios out of him for a little while. Is the bullpen good enough to carry them when they have starting pitcher injuries? Is Tanner Scott enough? Is he good enough where they should be good for a while? Or is it something where they got to hope that the pitching holds together long enough and it's really going to be the offense that carries them to a championship?
I mean, yeah, you can't, you got to give it to the Dodgers because they understand that their pitching is really, out of all the three aspects of their team, their pitching is the weak, their starting pitching is the weakness because of the non-ability of the pitchers staying on the field. And so they've done a good job of improving their bullpen and getting Blake Treinen back. They still have Michael Kopech. I forgot they had him, to be honest. Evan Phillips is still there, and adding Tanner Scott to that, it's the back end of their bullpen is just one of the best units in baseball with just those four guys alone. So that's scary. And I think that will go a long way to helping their starting rotation once they start getting injured in May, if that late.
In May, yeah. They do have, again, I mentioned earlier, they do have a lot of different options for depth starters. Some of those guys, because this is how it works, some of these guys are injured. I do believe set to miss a good portion of the year. Hurt, Ryan, and Sheehan all had Tommy John at some point in time last year. So most of them are probably going to miss most of the year. Gavin Stone is set to miss the entire year after shoulder surgery. Reliever Bruisdar Gratterall had a labrum surgery in like November. He probably misses most of the year as well. So there's five different pitchers right there that'll be out. But even then, you look in the minors, they've got Landon Knack, they've got Nick Frost. So if they can figure out what went wrong with Bobby Miller, had an ERA of 8.5, was just absolutely terrible. They can figure out what happened there. They've got Justin Robleski, they got Ben Kasperius, and then prospects and stuff coming up, right? Different guys in the system. So if you squint really hard, I think right now you can see 12, 13 different starters that they have available to them, which feels like it should be enough. I haven't looked at their numbers. I can tell you the Atlanta Braves, every year of the last four, they've used between 10 and 13 conventional starters, right? That doesn't count relievers working as openers, just regular starters. They've used between 10 and 13 every single season. So I feel like 13 is a pretty safe number to have. Most teams, I feel like, can't identify 13 potential starters, realistic starters, before the season starts. Your Phillies, you mentioned that the rotation's incredibly healthy. Four of these guys made 27 or more starts last year. Ranger Suarez, Nola, Sanchez, and Wheeler. Wheeler threw 200 innings. Nola missed it by two outs, which is just kind of a bummer if you think about it. Can you think of, after these five, those four and Luzardo, can you think of eight more starters your team could potentially have for 2025? Out of your eight? Minor leaguers, eight.
I can think of four, maybe five, if you want to include Taijuan Walker, because you know he's going to get a start or two here and there.
They got to get that money. They got to recoup that money somehow. Yeah.
But no, I don't think I can think of eight more starters in the minor league that could prove to be stopgap guys.
Okay. I do want to ask a question that everybody is kind of assuming the Dodgers are going to win the World Series again, right? I do want to kind of devil's advocate a little bit. Is it concerning that six of their lineup regulars and three of the four members of their bench are all over the age of 30? Like Shohei's only, he'll turn 31 and Mookie's 32, but like Freddie Freeman's 35. Max Muncy's almost 35. Your bench, Austin Barnes is 35. Miguel Rojas is almost 36. Chris Taylor's 34 and looks like he's 64 at the plate. Is it a little bit concerning that the offense is so old, or is it something where enough of those guys should hit where it won't matter?
Yeah, I think that most of those guys, especially the Freddie Freemans, the Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, what they do, it's really, age is not really going to affect what those three guys do. And we've seen it with Freddie Freeman. He's pretty up there in age for a baseball player, and he's still one of the top 15 at worst hitters in the sport. And so it's more concerning for guys like Max Muncy, who I didn't even realize was 35 until today. I saw that today and I was like, oh my God, he's 35 years old. But yeah, Max Muncy, Chris Taylor, like you said, he's already shown that massive decline at the plate. And more guys that are more, not that Max Muncy is more defensively minded than offensively minded, but guys that are more defensively minded plus Max Muncy, you're going to have more of a concern with them getting up there in age than with the Freddie Freeman's, Mookie Betts, and Shohei Ohtani's.
Yeah. I mean, Will Smith's still young enough. He doesn't turn 30, I think, until this season. But like Michael Conforto coming up on 32, played well enough after the shoulder injury with the Giants last year to get this deal. But, you know, Teoscar and Michael Conforto in the corners is not a defensively amazing outfield, right? Around Tommy Edman. And you're in a situation where Mookie Betts is playing shortstop again. Like, you can see a scenario where, and I'm not saying this is going to happen, I'm not rooting for this, you never root for injuries. Like, you can see a scenario where a 2024 Atlanta Braves type of season happens to the Dodgers. And they deal with injuries, they deal with underperformance and slumps. And before you realize it, they are fighting to, it feels like they're a safe bet to make the playoffs no matter what, but you can definitely see a scenario where it's not just preordained that they win 130 games and sweep everybody on the way to the World Series. Like there are legitimate paths. Now, that being said, this is absolutely the favorite in baseball to make the World Series. The big question here, and nobody's going to be, not everybody's going to be happy with either answer that we give. But the big question for you, Troy, is this Dodgers offseason bad for the sport of baseball, and why?
Yeah, that's a tough question. It's been the ongoing discussion on Twitter for the past few days, really ever since they signed really the whole offseason, and then it's just amped up ever since they signed Roki Sasaki and then Tanner Scott. But I don't really it's not so much that it's bad for baseball, because a lot of people are going to be watching the Dodgers. It's going to get a lot of eyes on Dodgers baseball, and the Dodgers are going to be on national television a lot with that roster that they have. And so they're going to get a lot more eyes on the product. It's going to help the television ratings. What I do think it's bad for is the parity that everybody likes to say that baseball has. And while there hasn't been a repeat champion, World Series champion in baseball,
the Yankees, right?
Since the Yankees three-peated, it's still that parity. There's still haves, have-nots, 50 feet of crap, and the Oakland A's. So
they're not the Oakland A's anymore.
The Sacramento A's.
Yeah. The Marlins are the ones that really have been bad. They're getting $70 million in revenue sharing this year, and. Okay, sorry. I cut you off, and I'm sorry. I wanted to share the stat that I saw. The Dodgers' salary for the 2025 season will be $375 million. If you count 2025, the Marlins' payroll this entire decade, so 6 years, is $429 million. And if you hear that and think the problem is the Dodgers, that's the issue baseball has to fix. The Marlins are getting $70 million in revenue sharing money this year, and they cut payroll by $40 million. And I'm not saying that every team could spend like the Dodgers are spending, right? Andrew Friedman famously in like 2016 said, if you try to be rational on every free agent, you'll finish third on every free agent. So you'll be the Red Sox or the Blue Jays, right? Yeah. You'll finish third on every free agent. But off the top of my head, I can think of five teams that their owners are worth billions that could spend not even like the Dodgers do, but into the revenue, like into the CBT, and don't. The Dolan family that owns the Guardians is worth $4.6 billion. They're one of the most low spending, tightwad, I guess, teams in baseball. The Ricketts family that owns the Cubs, they're worth $5.3 billion. Why are the Cubs afraid to go into the CBT? The Red Sox, the Henry family, is worth $6 billion. The Lerner family, the Nationals, $6.6 billion. And these teams don't spend even into the CBT, never mind significantly into it. And it's just the real problem with baseball. I see a lot of fans have been asking for a lockout, a strike, or whatever, to put a cap in floor or to put a salary cap in place. And one, if you say that the players should strike for a salary cap, that's incredibly dumb, because they would never do that, because a salary cap would only hurt them. They would strike for a salary floor, which requires a minimum level of spending. The owners aren't going to lock out for a floor. The players aren't going to strike for a cap, but there's a couple teams like, yes, they have liquidity and cash flow issues legitimately, but a large majority of owners just decide they're comfortable making their annual profit and their franchise value goes up versus taking the risk of signing players and trying to win. There's no reason that the Pirates have Paul Skenes for five more years, and they're looking to trade fellow really impressive young pitcher Jared Jones just to make an offensive upgrade. They should just be able to pay for an offensive upgrade. They should pay for an offensive upgrade while they're getting all this excess value from Paul Skenes, and they refuse to do it. And to me, as frustrating as it is of what the Dodgers are doing, the Pirates, the Marlins, that's the bigger problem in baseball. The Mariners, the Cardinals not spending money. They had to cut salary just to redirect funds into player development to fix some of that stuff because the owners, who are worth billions of dollars, won't allow the team to raise the overall amount of spending on a year-to-year basis. And to me, as much as the Dodgers irritate the hell out of me with what they're doing, what they've done the last couple off seasons, the bigger problem is baseball is all those other teams at the bottom that don't spend and make it possible for the Yankee or for the Dodgers to find the new market inefficiency of don't be afraid to go into the market and sign dudes because nobody else will.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I definitely think, and we've talked about it before, I definitely think there needs to be a salary floor where teams have to spend a minimum amount of money that is much higher than most of the teams are currently spending. But and the CBA is up after 2026. I think there's going to be an extended discussion about the new CBA with what the Dodgers have done and probably also talking about what the other teams that are not spending have done are doing or not doing. And I think it's going to go into a lockout just because it's crazy what's going on in baseball. You've got the Dodgers spending over $400 million roughly a year. And then you've got other teams that are spending less than $100 million. And really the big issue with the teams not wanting to spend, and it's never going to happen unless these guys, you know, knock on wood, die off. There's really no other way to put it because most of them aren't going to sell. A lot of these owners that only care about profits don't need to be owning a sports team. Like they need to move on and let other people that want to win and have the billions and billions of dollars, like Steve Cohen, like the people that own the Dodgers, like the new owner of the Baltimore Orioles who says he wants to win, but Mike Elias doesn't want to do anything to prove that they want to win, or the Toronto Blue Jays who supposedly maybe, who knows, or want to win, but nobody wants to go play for them because of the snow and the tax. It's just
and the uncertainty. Like the front office is lame ducks. You've got Bo and Vlad on their final years. I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of elements that play into all of it, and just as a whole, from the top to the bottom, that really need to be fixed. And I don't think that any of it is going to be fixed in the next CBA, and I don't think any of it is going to be fixed before Rob Manfred is out as the commissioner of the sport.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact quote, but Steve Cohen talking about owning the Mets, this is like in April of this year, last year, so this is 2025 now, said it was either a civic duty or a civic responsibility of his to be willing to spend some of his money to make the team into a winner. That he grew up a fan and he had enough money where he could afford to not make as much money from the team and spend a little more to make him a winner. And we saw how in the last CBA negotiation, other owners freaked out about the possibility of Steve Cohen just buying all the players. And they changed the rules. They added the CBT tier and everything that they were calling the Cohen tax because of him. And I'm curious to see what the reaction here is this next negotiation, because I feel like you are going to see another internal divide amongst the owners with the, I'm not going to call them small market teams because none of these are in small markets, right? The A's chose to go there. I'm not giving them credit for that. Lower payroll teams. I'm calling lower payroll teams. Lower payroll teams versus higher payroll teams, right? You're going to have the teams at the bottom, whether it's because of liquidity issues like the Marlins, or just lack of spending, the Pirates, things like that, you know, the Guardians or whatever. I think you're going to see a bigger schism between those two sides than you have in the past. And I'm curious to see what MLB does, what Rob Manfred and the negotiators do to overcome that so that they can present a united front to the players, because they always try to resolve it internally so they can present a united front to the players and get what they want. And last time the united front was, we're going to institute the Cohen tax, which the Dodgers have shown they don't care. They'll go through it and it doesn't matter. So curious to see what happens. But in the meantime, in 2025, if I had to bet NL versus AL in the World Series, I'm taking the NL 7 days a week and Sunday after church. It seems like it's a very easy call to make. If you're placing a bet right now, take the NL to win the World Series.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I've been saying it even before the Dodgers loaded up on talent, the National League. It was highly evident in 2024. The National League is a much better league than the American League. The American League is very top heavy, and their top heavy is still probably middle of the pack in the NL, especially when you got the Dodgers, the Phillies, the Braves being hopefully for your sake healthy in 2025, the New York Mets, and it's just the Chicago Cubs. Yeah. It's just the
speaking of the Mets, stacked. They were the ones who broke the reliever dam, right? Like Jeff Hoffman signed a week ago, right? But they signed AJ Minter on Friday to a 2-year, $22 million deal. There's an opt-out after the first year. Some of the reporting is that this is the first double-digit AAV multi-year deal for a non-closer with an opt-out. After that, the A's signed Jose Leclerc for 1 year and $10 million, and then we saw Tanner Scott come off the board on Sunday. AJ Minter going from the Braves to the Mets. Do you like it as a Phillies fan, or do you love it as a Phillies fan?
I hate that he's staying in the division. It adds some more power to the middle of their bullpen, but they already added a good bit of help to the back end of their bullpen, and now the middle of their bullpen's a little more. Isn't there another team like the Dodgers whose weakness is their starting rotation, and they understand that, and so they're trying to do what they can to improve their bullpen where it needs improvement, and AJ Minter is a good way to do that. The good news is it wasn't Tyler Matzek, because that would have been even worse to have him still in the division.
I believe he is still a free agent. He was traded from the Braves to the Giants last year in the Jorge Soler deal. The Giants cut him, and like guys always do, he re-signed on a minor league deal with the Braves. So I'm pretty sure he'll be back with the organization some point in time this winter, and he'll come back next year. Start off in the minors and then work its way back up and be nails again. Just watch. This has been First Pitch for Monday, January 20th. Listen on audio. Do us a favor. Leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel. Hit the notification bell. Either way, tell your friends. FirstPitchPodcast.com to get your daily MLB fix. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.